I want to read to you this morning from Matthew chapter 9. A familiar passage, at least to me, or if you grew up in the church or you've ever been in missions rallies or evangelistic meetings, they talk about this idea of the harvest. And we're going to see this right here in this first chapter of, or this ninth chapter of Matthew. I'm starting in verse 35 and work my way through 38. Jesus has been doing his ministry. Jesus went through all the towns and the villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." Over the next few weeks here in November, we are going to be chatting through this passage. Pastor Ben, I believe, will be speaking next week, and then Pastor Cal will be speaking after that. And we're breaking up the sermons into three areas dealing with this passage. The harvest is plenty is sermon number one. The workers are few is sermon number two. Pray to the Lord of the harvest will be sermon number three. It's kind of like three blind men trying to describe the same elephant. We will be chewing on this passage together, reflecting on it, and I encourage you to be here and be paying attention, to ask him what the Spirit is saying to you through these sermons. There's not a lot about Alberta that I missed. I pastored there for about 5 or 6 years, pastored in Medicine Hat, Alberta. But I will tell you one thing that I did miss, and I continue to miss very much. I miss seeing harvest. I miss seeing the wheat fields just full of wheat to overflowing. We would drive on this piece of road from Brooks through to Medicine Hat, the straightest piece of road you'd ever seen. And on both sides, you'd see wheat fields just forever and ever and ever. It was just incredibly beautiful, especially during harvest time. It gave this amazing image of fruitfulness. It gave this amazing sense of a job well done, especially when the tractors got out there and started to work the fields. It was just really quite a neat sight. I don't know if you've ever had the privilege of growing up on a farm. I never grew up on a farm, but my mom did. That meant that many times for family holidays, we'd head out to the prairies up in northern Alberta, around in the Glendale, in Bonnyville area of that corner of Alberta, and we'd get to go to his grandpa's farm, and there was nothing like the experience of running through a wheat field, just running through it, and at the time, you know, we weren't that tall. Bjorgens don't grow very big, but the wheat was pretty tall, and so you could almost have it cover you as you're marching through the fields. And there was just nothing quite like that experience. Just this sense of a bounty, this sense of food, and being able to feed multiple people. And how do these seeds get that crunched up and turned into bread, into flour, and to all sorts of ways to feed people. It's a beautiful image of fruitfulness. And Jesus uses the harvest as a beautiful image of fruitfulness when it comes to mission, when it comes to the mission that we are all called to be a part of. And like the fields of wheat from Brooks to Medicine Hat, the mission is everywhere. As far as the eye can see, the mission is everywhere. No matter where you look, there is mission. Our theme for the month has been the word sent, and we've got this giant paper airplane, a whimsical idea of saying the Spirit can send us where he will, where he desires to. And we've got a tagline with our series called Sent. It says, "The Holy Spirit is calling. Where is the Holy Spirit sending you?" And we really want you to reflect on that phrase throughout the next month here. Where is the Holy Spirit sending you? We are all sent. We are all on mission. And there's a great harvest all away around us. We see in this passage right off the bat that the Messiah is on duty. He's doing all sorts of Messiah work. He's doing all sorts of kingly work, what the Messiah is supposed to do. He's teaching in the synagogues. He's getting invited in or marching his way in or being the teacher there, just chatting about the scriptures and talking about how to understand them. It says that he's proclaiming the good news of the kingdom. He's proclaiming good news, talking about the signs and the wonders, talking about what the kingdom is about, talk about who he is and what he represents. And then the passage says he is healing every disease and sickness. So not only is he talking and preaching, he's working it out. He's doing these great Messiah activities. I love how it says in the message, it's not only healing every disease and sickness, it's both bodies and lives. Whatever infirmities that come along, whether it's that you need something that's broken, fixed, or you might have struggles in your minds or your thoughts, whatever it is, the Messiah is on mission to help get the word out, proclaim the kingdom, heal every disease and every sickness. And in the midst of these activities that he's doing, he starts talking in metaphors. Or at least the story starts talking in metaphors. It talks the language of shepherding and the language of farming. And we see both of these metaphors, not just in Matthew chapter 9, we also see it in chapter 10 of Luke. They're very similar passages. In fact, if you read them, they're almost word for word outside of the first part. In Matthew, it says, Jesus says to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. In Luke chapter 10, verse 2, he told them, talking about disciples, the same thing. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, or to send out workers into his harvest field. The main difference between these passages and the main difference between what's going on is that there's a bit more of preamble with Matthew. In the passage of Matthew, we see that Jesus is already doing Messiah work in amongst the towns, and he's got this compassion for the people, and then he starts talking to disciples. In Luke, this is Jesus saying, hey, I'm about to commission you disciples off to do some work. I don't think they're really different stories. They're just told in different ways. Because if you continue in the Matthew passage, you'll see that as soon as Jesus finishes these words, ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field, you get into chapter 10 of Matthew, and the disciples are being commissioned. This is a commissioning passage for disciples. When we talk about the harvest, when we talk about the workers in the harvest, when we talk about praying to the Lord of the harvest, this is the language of commissioning. Jesus is about to send out his disciples. And so there's two reflections that I want to share with you today, and then I'd like to end our service with the Lord's Supper. Two reflections that I'm going to ask from this passage. Number one, who does Jesus have compassion for? Very simple question. I think shows up in the passage. Who does Jesus have compassion for? And number two, what is Jesus therefore telling his disciples? Two very simple reflections. What does Jesus have compassion for? What is Jesus telling his disciples? What does Jesus have compassion for? We see this language of the shepherd. Jesus sees the people. And the word in our Bibles often is translated compassion. He had compassion for these people that he saw. Another word for that might be he was heartbroken. He saw these people he was ministering to, he was teaching to, he was proclaiming the kingdom of God to, and he saw them and he was heartbroken. And then he uses a shepherd metaphor as a way to explain why. It's like they are sheep without a shepherd. Now, shepherd language is pretty important language in the scriptures. It's often used for the people of Israel when they do not have a leader. We see the language that takes place when Moses might be leaving the scene. We see it in Numbers chapter 27 to 17. Says, may the Lord, the God who gives breath to all living things, appoint someone over this community to go out and come in before them, one who will lead them out and bring them in, so the Lord's people will not be like sheep without a shepherd. May the Lord bring some leader in so that, you know, if Moses is gone, well, there will be some shepherd that helps lead the sheep. And we see this language further on in 1 Kings chapter 22, verse 17, this idea of not having a shepherd. Then Micaiah answered, I saw all Israel scattered on the hills like sheep without a shepherd. There was no leader. And the Lord said, these people have no master. Let each one go home in peace. So this language of saying there are a people without a shepherd is talking about this idea of not having much leadership. When there's no leader, God becomes the shepherd. We see it in Ezekiel chapter 34, verses 11 to 16. I want to read that to you today. It says, for this is what the sovereign Lord says, I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he is with them, so will I look after my sheep. I will rescue them from all the places where they were scattered on the day of clouds and darkness. I will bring them out from the nations and gather them from the countries, and I will bring them into their own land. I will pasture them on the mountains of Israel, in the ravines, and in all the settlements in the land. I will tend them in a good pasture, and the mountain heights of Israel will be their grazing land. There they will lie down in good grazing land, and there they will feed in a rich pasture on the mountains of Israel. I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord. I will search for the lost and bring back the strays. I will bind up the injured and strengthen the weak, but the sleek and the strong I will destroy. I'm looking for people that are willing to follow me, he's saying. I will shepherd the flock with justice. When there's no leader in the land, God says, I'll be a leader. I'll be the shepherd. I'll be a shepherd who feeds the people. I will bring nutrition. I will bring nurturing elements so that they can grow, that they can find life, that they can find the ability to move forward. I will be the God, the leader, the shepherd who heals the sheep. When they're broken, when they're wounded, when they're struggling, when they're going through difficulty, I will tend to them. And I will be the shepherd who brings back lost sheep. If they're scattered, if they're going off on their own directions, if they are lost because there's no leadership on the ground, I will bring them back. I will be the good shepherd. I will lead my sheep. I will bring back lost sheep. And so what's implied in this passage is not just that Jesus is saying he's got compassion on the people because they are his sheep. But he's saying that somebody, somewhere along the line, has forgot to do their job. The language in the NIV says, New International Version says, harassed and helpless. And some of the versions that you might be reading from, they might say different words there. But harassed and helpless, this is the language of being bullied. These are people that have been bullied. These are people that have been harassed. They've been treated poorly, they've been neglected, they have been used and abused. And they're helpless. They can't do anything about being harassed. They've got, whether it's the Roman Empire that is ruling their land at that time, or whether they have corrupt leaders that are amongst them, they are being bullied and there's nothing they can do about it. And Jesus is frustrated by this. The compassion, heartbroken, I should say. The implication is that the leaders of Israel are not doing their job. They're asleep at the wheel. And like Yahweh does in Ezekiel, Jesus is passing judgment on false leaders. You are not looking after them. You church leaders on the ground, you're not looking after them. You Pharisees, you're not looking after your people. You church leaders are not bringing the people in underneath the leadership of God. So what kind of people does Jesus have compassion for? Who does Jesus have compassion for? Well, Jesus has compassion for shepherdless crowds. He has compassion for shepherdless crowds, people that are harassed and helpless and confused and wayward and mistreated and aimless, people that have no authority in their life to guide them or to protect them or to bring them hope, people that are lost. Lost. Now, there's a word we use a lot in Christian circles. We've used it for many years. We want to reach out to the lost. But that word lost sometimes comes with a lot of baggage. We have many people that grew up in church life and understand Christian language, and we live in a little bit in a post-Christian culture where people have heard messages and have found it wanting, or they feel like they know what the Christian message is all about and they've dismissed it. And sometimes people, when they hear the word lost, especially if they get word that we consider them lost, they get a little offended. People don't like being called lost. We all like to know that we're on some kind of direction. We're moving in some kind of way. If you're calling me lost, you're saying that I don't have it all together. And that's offensive. In a world where we're self-made men and women, how on earth can you say that I am lost? It's insulting. It's ignorant to people's intelligence. I would suggest that what this passage is talking about is not talking about lost people in a snobbish way. They're so lost because they're so ignorant. They're so lost because they just don't know the right way. Saying, well, and yes, I'll go here. It's like coming across a lost puppy where the rain is pouring down on the puppy. And you see them just on a street corner in near a puddle. The rain's coming down and they just look bedraggled. And you just look at them and your heart breaks and you go, oh, you are so lost. Where's your home? Where's your owners? Where are the people that care for you? You're so lost. I'd like to redeem that word lost in a way that's really attached to compassion and love. I know in my field, in pastoral life, I come across people all the time where I can think of no other word than the word lost. You're just lost. You're fragile. You've been gone through hurts. You're broken. You've had abuses take place in your life. You don't even know who you are anymore. You feel like life is just random motions and movement. You don't know what you're going to do in life, and you just feel lost. Jesus has compassion on those that just feel lost. And Jesus sees that there's a lot of people out there. And so the metaphor changes from a shepherd to the idea of harvest. The harvest is plentiful. Here's sheep without a shepherd. My heart is broken. It's people without a shepherd. It's lost people. They don't have leadership. They've been mistreated. They've been poorly treated. And look how large the harvest is. Literally ripe. Ripe. Ready to be harvested. It's right there in front of us. This is very helpful language to a community. The ancient people of Israel were a community of farmers. They understood the language of farming. They understood the language of the harvest. You know, it's very important to get the harvest right. Harvest was the identity of society. You know, this language of harvest is the entire community shuts down when you have to bring in the harvest. It's who we are. There's this idea that there's a broken country out there that can be renewed. Jesus is saying, look at the brokenness. And yet the harvest is right there. There's an opportunity for renewal. So what is Jesus telling his disciples? He's saying, disciples, friends, there is a need. Jesus wanted to awaken a similar compassion in his disciples. There is a need. Now, that might sound very simple to you. You might have heard that many times on a Sunday morning. You may have read that many times while you're reading through your Bible. You may have heard that many times in Bible studies and in small groups and when chatting with friends. There is a need. But I just want to get that thought across to us again today. Because sometimes a need just goes over our head. Sometimes it's just language again. It's too overwhelming or too many times we've heard it and we don't see it anymore. Or we don't embrace it anymore. Part of our discipleship strategy, when we talk about making disciples in Emmanuel, it's we believe in belonging, helping people find a place of belonging, community. We're saved into a Christian community. We believe in growing. We need to know what this Christian life is all about. What does it mean to live for the King? What does it mean to live in the kingdom? We also believe in sharing. Sharing our faith, sharing our skills, sharing our passions, our giftings, reaching out into the world, culture making, bringing life to this world that's out there, having compassion on others. Well, in that strategy, we have a little booklet on share, and it says the first step of understanding how to share is to know the need. If we don't know what the need is, if we don't know what the concern is, we will not respond. And so we need to know that there's a need. A couple of years ago, Compassion Canada, an organization that works with reaching kids on the ground, similar to what we have with Operation Christmas Child, where you can sponsor children, you can reach out to kids in different areas of the globe. And Compassion Canada said, hey, we'd love to send you on a trip. Come with us to Ecuador. And so Nikki and I headed off to Ecuador. And what they were trying to do is they were trying to educate us in the need. So we got to go from orphanage to orphanage. We got to go from kids program to kids program. We got to see what our dollars would do on the ground. We got to see the difference in kids' lives. We got to see what the kingdom is up to in the lives of kids. We also got to see some of the heartache. We got to see broken neighborhoods. We got to see broken families. We got to see the despair. We got to see kids that were hungry. We got to see kids that were not clothed, because he had nothing to wear. And we come home going, ah, there's a need. It's a wonderful way to educate. And Jesus is educating his disciples. Do you see what I see? Do you see what I see? Do you see these people here in front of you, disciples? My friends, do you not see the pain in their eyes? Do you not see the brokenness? Do you not see the discouragement? Do you not see the hunger that they have? Jesus is educating his disciples that these broken people can be renewed. They can be renewed. Lost people can be found. And that's the second thing that Jesus is telling his disciples. So there is a need. But number two, the situation is critical. The situation is critical. I remember in Medicine Hat, right around the fall season, we were just gearing up for the fall season in kids' church and so on. I had lots of volunteers. There were youth and young adults. It was a vibrant ministry and lots of volunteers. And then there'd be a few weeks in October, late September, all throughout October, into a little bit November, where these kids would just disappear. These volunteers would just be gone. And a lot of them were kids that were growing up in farms. And it was all hands on deck. They would skip school. They would skip church. They'd skip everything to get out on the field, to go out and get the harvest. Because you've only got so much time. When there's that moment, it's right then. It's critical. It's right now. Have you ever seen a scene like this where there's multiple tractors going through the field? It's quite a sight. What's that called? A combine. Those are not tractors on the screen. Those are combines. And there's lots of people I could have that conversation with and say tractors, and they go, yeah, yep, yep. But you can't have that with a prairie girl. Combines, Jeff, come on. You're going to lose us if you don't say combines. Have you ever seen combines like that? Have you ever seen them all in a row? Anybody? Oh, yeah, lots. Oh, fantastic. It's a beautiful scene. And it's often lots of people from different farms getting together saying, let's get that harvest done. Let's get the work done. Because the time is critical. It's a very important. Ungathered harvest is in danger of being lost. It was very difficult to find a happy farmer in Medicine Hat. Oh, there's been lots of sun. Well, it might be too dry. Oh, well, it's great to get some water for the fields. Oh, it might be too much water, you know. It might make the wheat, you know, sprout too quickly or whatever. Sprout? Is that what? Sprout? Yeah, sprout too quickly. Oh, you know, there's always a concern because a weather during harvest time can be destructive. You got to watch the weather. You got to watch where the wheat is at. And if it's ripe, it's got to come off now. The time is critical. You got to get it off. The crowd here that Jesus is talking about is in danger of being lost like an unharvested wheat field. Jesus has compassion for these broken people. He says the time is now. The need is now and the time is now. And the great irony is these crowds in the Gospel of Matthew, over and over again, were seen as receiving Jesus in a positive way. When you see crowds in some of the other Gospels, Gospel of Luke, Gospel of Mark, crowds are not always happy people. In Luke, crowds are sometimes happy and sometimes not. Often Luke is saying that the crowd is always divided with Jesus. Jesus says some words, the crowd goes, yeah, that was great. The other crowd goes, let's stone him or let's get him killed. That's what Luke does. He's always dividing the crowd. Mark makes the crowd something that jostles and pushes and bullies. And so there's a different language of crowd in Gospel. But in Luke, in Matthew, the crowd often comes to Jesus with a positive response, which makes sense here if you are in the crowd and you are lost and you are wayward and you are helpless and you are harassed. When you're drowning, you're really open to receiving a life preserver. You really are. When you're going through difficult times, you're really open to receiving help. So Jesus is saying, I have compassion on shepherdless people. He's saying to his disciples, there's a need. Don't you see it? Don't you see it, Peter? Don't you see it, James? Don't you see it, Andrew? There's a need out there. And then he says, and the need is urgent. It's right now. If it's the harvest is plenty, it's right now. It's ready to go. We got to get out there. And the irony is, the crowd's receptive. They're just willing to hear. They're willing to receive. And friends, today, Jesus still wants us to see the need. He's still saying to each and every single one of us, just like disciples, there's a need. Don't you see it? Don't you see it, Jeff? Didn't you just walk downtown? Didn't you see those people? Steve, didn't you see them in your neighborhood? Didn't you see them as you're walking by them on the street? John, didn't you notice the pain in their eyes? Didn't you notice the conversation, the concerns, the doubts, the questions they're asking? The need is there. And the time is still now. It's always been urgent. There's always been a harvest. The harvest has always been ripe. And the great irony is that people are still receptive. We might not think that, but the crowd is not as scary as you think. Even recent studies, and I was just looking it up just to make sure I wasn't quoting some study from decades ago, the study says that 82% of non-believers would consider coming to church if they were invited. Now, coming to church isn't necessarily what we're looking for people to do. We're looking for people to come to know Jesus, whatever that looks like, however that comes to them. 82% at least just might come to church if we ask them. The problem is the studies on the other side have suggested that about 2% of Christians have actually invited somebody into a faith conversation. Well, that's a strange kind of math going on. Now, that changes a little bit for Protestants, especially Baptists and Pentecostals, especially those that attend church more than 2 times a month. Those ones tend to about a third of the time invite somebody out to church or into the community, into a small group, or into some kind of a conversation, which I think is great. It's a start. It's not easy to do, to engage people, because we're scared of crowds. Scared of what they might think or what they might say. But this study was done. This is Lifeway Studies. It showed 5 reasons of why people don't invite people into a faith conversation. And some of the reasons were, well, it's hard, or I don't know what to tell them. I don't know how to talk about Jesus with people. A good percentage of them said, well, you know, I just get tired of being told no. I every time I talk about Jesus, you just see the wall come up. But to me, the funniest or the most ironic answer to why people don't invite people into church is the vast majority of people go, I don't know. So the answer, why don't you invite people into some kind of Christian conversation or spiritual conversation, and the number one answer is, I don't know. I don't, maybe I never thought about it before. Maybe I never thought about it as a need. Maybe I never thought that this would be an important thing. I don't know. But you know, I just want to tell you that people are receptive. I have conversations with people every single week. They would not consider themselves Christians. They would not consider themselves of an understanding of who Jesus is. The conversations are right there. In fact, there's probably people in this building, in this room right here, that are here going, I'm not even quite sure what this Jesus stuff is all about, but I'm coming, and I'm learning, and I'm experiencing, and that's great. We want you to know Jesus. He changes our life. He changes the world. He brings us life and renewal. He wants us to not be shepherdless. He wants to be our shepherd. The situation's still critical. The time is still now. And people are still receptive. A challenge for you. When we reflect on the harvest, that the harvest is plenty, I challenge you this week in your prayer time to pray a couple things. Number one, ask God to give you an education. Now, that's a scary prayer. God, open my eyes. God, show me what I haven't been paying attention to. Help me to see the need, whether it's here locally, whether it's in my town, whether it's in my country, whether it's in the world somewhere. Educate me. Bring to mind the things I need to know so that I know what breaks your heart. In fact, a great way to educate yourself is to attend the Bursting Your Bubble course that starts this Tuesday, 7 a.m. here at the church. It's nice and early. You can get there before work, head off to work. Great way to educate yourself and how to have conversations about the faith. And number two, if that's not a difficult prayer, this one can be very difficult, but I encourage you to do it. This week, ask God to break your heart for lost people. There were times when I was growing up, I remember being at Bible college, being at an altar time, and praying that prayer. Oh God, break my heart for lost people. Help me not be numb to the people that I see. Help me not be frozen when the conversation opens up. Help me have my emotions stirred again by what stirs your emotions. Oh God, break my heart so I understand how much you love people. Perhaps we need to confess. Maybe we've been asleep at the wheel. Maybe we as church leaders and people that gather in churches Sunday after Sunday have not been responsible in getting the mission out and presenting to the world there's a God that loves. There's a God who is for you. There's a God who pursues you. And a God who is relentless in his pursuit. Maybe we need to seek forgiveness from God. Say, God, I need the Spirit to call me again, to send me out again, to have a heart for the mission field. Because the fields are ripe. The people are receptive. And the time is now.